page 45, tributes to Ken Metz. We've received many memorials to Ken Metz, who passed away on May 5th, 2018. The following are two of these, and the rest will be published in the fall issue of the BC. Mike Cole, friends who are part of us. Have you ever had a friend you only see now and then, and yet they are part of you? Ken Metz and I met in 1952 at Bell School in Chicago. We were the only kids in our grade who brought our lunch to school, so we were separated from everyone else, banished to a side table in the cafeteria, and we became friends. The teacher who ran the cafeteria got everyone to be quiet by banging a milk bottle on the table. Yes, in those days, milk came in bottles, small and large. Page 46. One day she banged so hard, the bottle broke. Chaos ensued, and a whole bunch of blind, low-vision, and deaf kids loved it. Bell School was for all three categories of sensory-disabled kids. Ken and I weren't in the same class. Indeed, with all the schooling we would have together, we never did find ourselves in the same class. Ken had lived in Los Angeles, where I was bound. So I remember standing in my kitchen talking on a wall phone. Remember those? We talked about what I might expect at Francis Blend in Los Angeles. He had already been there, knew some of their traditions, like they brought a Christmas tree in during the holidays. He mentioned it to say it was a good school. I would like it. He was right about that. I think back on this conversation. We were really little kids. That we spoke on the phone was remarkable. That he told me things I could use was typical of the Ken we all have known, always helpful, always full of good information. Then came the first day of the school year at John Marshall High School in Los Angeles, probably 1962. Who was this big guy, new student, wearing a suit? Something familiar. I knew this guy, and indeed I did. We finished high school. We spent hours on the phone. Now talking girls, now sports, now blind world politics, now messing around with the phones themselves. Page 47. Yes, we were at least marginally involved in what was called phone freaking. We lived a couple of blocks from each other in Hollywood. Then he moved to the San Fernando Valley. And in those days, you had to pretty much sleep over if you were going to hang out in the evening. Remembering, Ken made a deal with our beloved gym teacher in high school. He would climb the climbing rope to the top as the semester progressed. In our big urban high school of mostly sighted kids, he made it. There he was, working in the youth department at Braille Institute. I was at the Los Angeles City College just up the street. We got together and had fun. We hung out with the same kids at the foundation for the junior blind. We went to camp, and we both went to UCLA. And when Ken, now about to be married, moved to San Francisco, my wife and I stayed with him a couple of nights until we found our first wonderful place in the city. The rumble of the streetcar going past Ken's house in San Francisco was thrilling to me. That streetcar, the L, if memory serves, I couldn't wait to ride. I had a guide dog. He had several. At UCLA, all the people and dogs had fun. Page 48. And yes, we did turn them loose in the library. Hey, we were maybe 19 or 20. And I remember he would play instruments and sing corny songs, not to drive the rest of us young people crazy. Well, maybe a little bit to drive us crazy, but because Ken was an enthusiastic guy. When he was in college, Ken typed for sighted kids. He was a very fast and accurate typist. He worked and worked, always thinking of ways to make a few dollars. He worked in sales, but he did telemarketing. If he got you to make an appointment with Matthews TV, Top of the Hill Daily City, he got paid a little. And he got into a pyramid scheme, selling an all-purpose cleaner called Haste. Oh, we teased him. But gently. You know why? Simple respect. He was a blind person who was, by God, not going to be without money coming in. And he worked for the phone company, personnel, you know. There he learned valuable lessons about proper reporting, which he took to his Lions Board membership, keeping an eye on personal policy that proved to be excellent oversight. And he was a rehabilitation counselor, and eventually the deputy of the DPI program, a contract with the Department of Rehabilitation. He left when he developed heart problems, and he had health concerns. But he always had energy for one more commitment, for one more meeting, for one more kind word. Page 49. He introduced me to Ralph Rock, the telephone pioneer who got beatball going. One pitch, Ken broke his thumb. Our friendship with Ken continued. We were rehab colleagues in the last 20 years we were separated, with him living in Los Angeles and my wife and I living in Berkeley. He headed the DPI program at Junior Blind. I was at the orientation center for the blind. We talked, commiserated, kept in touch. From being kids together, here we were supervising important programs in our state, like a couple of real grown-ups with rather important jobs. We traveled together with canes and dogs. We laughed and kidded, and always got along. Ken was such a talented guy, you know. Musical, funny, with very corny jokes. He debated in high school, sometimes adopting a persona, playing a role. He always won. At least, that's how I remember it. We were the kind of friends who didn't have to catch up like family. We knew what we needed to know about each other's lives. We could jump into our interaction without need of background. I saw Ken as a great model for us as blind people. He always worked, and he filled his time with civic activities. He was a Lion. He volunteered at our San Francisco broadcast services, running a talk show. He was often the sound man at conventions. And lately, many of us enjoyed his humorous congeniality, hosting Tech Talk. Two people growing up with California's blindness politics, we looked after each other. It's called having your back. Well, there were times when a word, a warning, an ever so slight indication, I could trust his judgment, and I think he could trust mine. Ken was my friend, and I know I was his friend. We knew our families. We went through some hard times and great happy times. That I will miss him, just knowing he was there, speaks volumes about how, as we get older, we must remember that our friends are assets better than riches. Hearing a familiar, friendly voice at just the right moment is better than almost anything. My heart goes out to Pam and Ken's children. He was a big man, someone who often did his best work behind the scenes. And those of us who knew him experienced his humanity and his love. Ken Metz was a great man who gave of himself with enthusiasm and kindness. His loss is a hard one for a great many of us. Farewell, old friend. You have done more than your share. Rob Turner. My first memory of Ken goes way back to 1966. I was 14. My voice was just beginning to change, and I was still a bit shy. Page 51. Ken would have been 18 or 19. Back then, the Foundation for the Junior Blind offered classes and entertainment for blind youth. Many of you will remember its founder, Norm Kaplan. His favorite slogan was, "It's nice to be nice," which was immortalized in his voice in the movie Mask. The drivers who transported us to and from events may have been paid. However, I believe that some were volunteers because one Saturday morning, actress Anne Hathaway, Mr. Drysdale's secretary on the Beverly Hillbillies, picked me up. I doubt that she was driving for pay. Anyway, the first time I met Ken was on a return trip from home from the foundation. On this occasion, the driver was a young lady with a very sexy voice. Ken blew me away when he boldly asked her out. I thought, hey, this guy is cool. Rumor has it that Ken was somewhat of a flirt. This little story of mine does nothing to dispel that rumor. Ken, my friend, we're sure going to miss you.